shows loss of orexin neurons in many of these patients. So in future, we should be able to have more robust biomarkers for this endophenotypes. I move on, for the sake of time, to another part of the limbic phenotype, to park pain. Pain is another very, very dominant issue in Parkinson's, has been neglected for many, many, many years. People have been aware of it. Some people have called it Parkinson's disease, pain under many umbrella, and others have called it a hidden epidemic. Now, pain, this is again some very recent work supported by Parkinson's UK, that the problem is, till to date, we do not have a single validated scale for pain in Parkinson's. Unless you have a scale or a tool that's validated, you can't really measure it. That is robust and valid. So with Parkinson's UK, we have started this study based on a classification, not like that, but like that, that we devised. And this classification has led to the development of what we think is the first PD pain scale. We are validating this at the moment, including Shubhankar's center here. We're dividing pain into muscle pain, central pain, pain that goes between on and off state, that the pain is particularly bad when the drug's wearing off, but gets better as the condition develops. Our condition is improved. Pain at night, pain around the mouth area, pain around the legs and limbs, and finally shooting pain down the body. So various different types of pain classified into severity by frequency. We hope that with this scale we'd be able to measure pain, give it proper relevance and significance that it deserves, and then lead to further treatment. And in fact, very reassuringly, the industry is increasingly listening to us. PANDA is not an animal, but this is the study that is due to complete soon, will be the first ever study of a drug, oxycodone and naloxone, which is otherwise known as Targine, to address pain in Parkinson's using that scale. So it'll be the first ever randomized placebo-controlled study addressing pain in Parkinson's, and following that there is another trial planned to address pain in Parkinson's. And this will lead to development of new evidence-based treatment for these different endophenotypes of non-motor nature within Parkinson's. So I've whizzed through fatigue, sleepiness, and pain. What are the other unexplored, underreported non-motor symptoms? Well, dribbling of saliva remains a real issue with some. Sexual disturbances, visual disturbances. Again, very little work has been done on that, although the retina has one of the highest levels of dopamine and several other neurochemicals involved in Parkinson's. Apathy. People lose interest in what they used to like a lot. And apathy, again, is emerging as a dominant non-motor phenotype within Parkinson's, and various autonomic problems of bowel and bladder. Now, I just wanted to highlight a little bit of work on double vision or diplopia. Those with Parkinson's in the audience might be able to tell me if this is a real issue or not. But we found in our survey, 22% of our patients had suffered or declared double vision to us at various levels. And we've done some work on this. This is Anna's work, who's here in the audience. And we've tried to classify the double vision that Parkinson's... Now, people will say, is double vision really non-motor? Well, it is, because it's actually driven through a non-motor mechanism, although the final outcome might be motor. So you can call it partially non-motor, if you will. So we see type 1, where you have a fleeting double vision, words jumping together. Type 2, which is a constant pattern, which is often related to eyes not converging properly. Type 3, which is linked to motor response fluctuations. So these patients have double vision when the drug's wearing off. Very important to recognize, because you can treat that with longer-acting dopaminergic drugs. Type 4 is when double vision is actually part of visual hallucinations. It's completely different to the mechanism of the types 1 to 3. And finally, type 5 is when we give some medications which can lead to diplopia and glaucoma, for instance. So again, this is something we're trying to refine, again, which will have a really tangible effect on how you deal with patients' quality of life in the clinic, because this has an indirect effect on vision and falls. So we'll have to explore that further, that link, in future. We have to be also mindful of the impulse control disorders. Here we see compulsive gambling. You can still get levodopa from the internet, which is where it's sold as an aphrodisiac, and also various other herbal agents containing dopaminergic drugs. And again, this is an area which there's strides are being made in trying to understand the pathophysiology, but it just adds to the whole complexity of drug-induced non-motor problems in Parkinson's, and I think we'll see more in this area in future. And the reason for putting this up is that there is also emerging a genetic influence. So some patients with Parkinson's might have a genetic a predictor or marker to suggest that they're going to develop the impulse control disorders. And if we can get that in a robust fashion, we'll be able to modify treatment in these patients in according fashion. So that really brings me towards the end of what I was really talking on, which is at the core of Parkinson's lies the traditionally held belief, motor Parkinson's. This is the tremor, the rigidity, the bradykinesia, the involvement of substantia nigra. This is what majority of our doctors believe in, and they like treating it. And to them, Parkinson's is this. You can measure that very nicely by measuring the Holiness scale, or some people would use the Unified Parkinson's Disease Rating Scale. As I've shown, however, if you just rely on this, it is very, very incomplete indeed, because surrounding that is this huge, huge, bigger core of non-motor problems. And that is cognitive, dementia, depression, neuropsychiatric, sleep, drug-induced, pain, and others, as we talked about, fatigue, other sleep problems, pain, apathy, vision, and so on. What we are not also very good on is the fact that surrounding that, there is another core, which is problems of high blood pressure, diabetes, cerebrovascular disease, and peptic ulcer disease. Very little research is at the moment there available to us to say how does these comorbid conditions, which are very common in the older population or in the multimorbid Parkinson's patient we're looking at, how do they modify the non-motor expression and perhaps the motor